Our third case for this morning is Wilcox v. Astru, 12-1484. And we will hear from Mr. Plummer.
Morning. My name is Al Plummer. I represent Danny Wilcox. This is an appeal from the ALJ's decision denying benefits for Social Security disability. Mr. Wilcox, the reason the appeal and the importance to Mr. Wilcox is that his Title II benefits ended on December 31st, 2009. Therefore, the appeal from the decision of the ALJ. I believe that the ALJ should have made the decision on his ulnar nerve palsy. The evidence, the medical evidence on the ulnar nerve palsy shows that, and the carpal tunnel shows that he does have that. He has an impediment to his nerve, which in turn prevents him from using his both hands, as a matter of fact. And his evidence was that he can't hold a cup of coffee for any 2 or 3 minutes. He drops things, his hands go numb. This was asked of the vocational expert. If this is true, can he work, or is there any work available? The vocational expert at that point in time said, no, there's no work available. So at that point, the judge, the ALJ, just kind of glosses over this and doesn't really approach this particular evidence or line of testimony. Secondly, it must be developed there are the 20 CFR 1513, I believe it's E. Says that the evidence must be complete and detailed enough to make a determination of the case. In this particular instance, the ALJ was requested several times, or at least one time, to have an MRI done. He didn't do the MRI. He was requested and there to have a mental examination to determine mental retardation.
I was not clear whether there was a specific request for an IQ test or any form of psychological testing.
I think that was done subsequent to that. His attorney then requested the appeals counsel, I believe in her brief, for the IQ test. But more importantly,
the brief that at the appeals council level, because obviously this is a tricky area, of course, because on the one hand there's some responsibility to make sure the record is developed, but on the other hand there is, especially for a counseled applicant, a responsibility to move forward with one's own case. And if people don't raise points, then they're not in the record.
Correct, Judge. And I think in this case is different from some of the other cases insofar as he doesn't have the money to seek these tests and therefore cannot show that the pain that he testified to is in fact real. But more importantly, on the mental retardation issue, the ALJ, on three occasions during his opinion, states that there is no evidence to the mental limits, to the degree of mental retardation. There was nothing in the record about an IQ test. All of these things that the ALJ is saying, I don't have these records.
But it's not like it's vacant. I mean, there is a difference between being so limited mentally that you're going to be found disabled and just, you know, not being as bright as the next person. And even if Mr. Wilcox is at the slower end of the spectrum, it doesn't necessarily mean his IQ is so low that that he can't do things. So I think that the ALJ wasn't convinced that there was enough there to take that next step and spend the government's money and hire a fleet of experts to look into this.
But then the ALJ relies upon not having that IQ to say he's not mentally disabled, and therefore I'm going to find against him. I mean, he's getting the cart.
Interestingly, I mean, think of the implications of what you're arguing for, though. It would really increase the expense of running the Social Security system quite a bit.
It's their obligation, and the obligation under the regulations are to build the case to the extent that the evidence shows.
Accurate record, sure. So that
we don't pass the laws or whatever. That's their obligation.
Neither do we, believe me. I want to go back to the ulnar nerve thing, because the ALJ, I'm looking at, I think it's Dr. Khan, the discussion of that in the ALJ's opinion in your brief. Dr. Khan, this is a consultative examination on July 8, 2008, and the ALJ reports fine and gross hand movement function was normal. The claimant was able to pick up a coin, button and unbutton clothing, zip and unzip clothing as well. So it seems to me the ALJ is simply not convinced by his testimony that his ability to hold things is as limited as you say it is.
But that comes and goes, and that's the evidence in the case. It comes and goes, and obviously on this examination, it wasn't there to the extent that it does at some other times. So that would be my answer to that. And it's up to the ALJ.
Yes, in a sense that the ALJ automatically makes a mistake by not crediting Mr. Wilcox's testimony fully.
That's correct. I mean, his credibility finding is at best, I don't think it complies with the evidence in the record. If you look at the evidence in the record, it just doesn't. It's not there.
All right. Well, thank you, and we'll hear from you in rebuttal. Mr. Levitt.
Good morning. David Levitt for the Commissioner. May it please the Court. Supported by the medical opinions, the medical evidence, and Mr. Wilcox's activities, the ALJ reasonably found Mr. Wilcox not disabled. The ALJ's residual functional capacity finding of a significantly limited range of light work, both mental and physical limitations, was consistent with, and even more deferential to Mr. Wilcox than, the opinions of Dr. Sands, Whitley, Gage, and Larson, the state agency psychologists and physicians. Similarly, consultative examiner Dr. Khan observed that Wilcox had normal range of motion, normal fine and gross motor function, normal motor and sensory exams, and a slow but steady gait. Those findings also support the ALJ's residual capacity assessment.
So what do we do about this argument that this is, in essence, an incomplete record, that if there had been more development of both his the MRI and also more development in particular, I suppose, of his mental capacity, the picture would have been different?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that this is an incomplete record. The agency ordered 3 consultative exams at taxpayer expense, and the record before the ALJ was complete. There's no indication that Mr. Wilcox was mentally retarded. While Dr. Cutler Kearns,
we mean what, IQ 59 or below?
70 or below. Well, it depends on the listing.
Okay.
Listing 12.05C would require an IQ below 70, among other factors such as deficits in adaptive functioning. I would note that Mr. Wilcox has not articulated any deficits in adaptive functioning, so I'm unclear on how he could meet that listing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, there's no indication that Mr. Wilcox was mentally retarded, because Dr. Cutler Kearns The consultative psychological examiner noted that Mr. Wilcox had a low IQ, but he did not suggest or diagnose mental retardation, not even rule out mental retardation.
So when he said low IQ, though, he didn't put a number on that. That was just sort of a way of saying less intelligent or what?
Yes, he said that Mr. Wilcox had a learning disability, and the ALJ accounted for that learning disability by limiting him to unskilled work and to jobs where reading, spelling, and math were not essential.
Apparently his math ability is pretty much non-existent, right?
Well, he was able to count backwards by threes with one mistake. So I believe Dr. Cutler-Kern said that he had a fair ability.
But isn't we have several Social Security cases, David. Didn't he get stumped by the how many packages would you need to buy if they were six packs to get 30? I think so. I think he didn't know how to answer that.
Yes, he did. But in the line right after that, Dr. Cutler-Kern said the client's ability to perform simple calculations presented verbally was fair. So he had a fair ability. And the jobs that the ALJ determined with vocational expert testimony that Mr. Wilcox would perform were not the type of jobs where such calculations were required. They're talking about bagging laundry and folding clothes.
Yeah, they were actually jobs for which I was a little more concerned with the hand ability than I was with the intellectual ability. Folder, bagger, palletizer.
Well, the ALJ limited Mr. Wilcox to no constant hand usage to go and accommodate any hand limitations. And Dr. Kahn, who was the most recent doctor to evaluate Mr. Wilcox's physical abilities, noted that Mr. Wilcox had normal, fine, and gross motor function.
Right.
So I think the ALJ was very deferential to Mr. Wilcox.
Mm-hmm.
In even giving those limitations. I would also like to say that there was no indication that Mr. Wilcox, the ALJ needed to order additional MRI. As I mentioned, Dr. Kahn noted that Mr. Wilcox had normal range of motion, normal motor and sensory exams. With that evidence, I don't think that the ALJ was required to order an additional MRI after the agency had already paid for three consultative exams. Under these circumstances, there was no reason for the ALJ to further supplement the record. In sum, the ALJ had sufficient evidence with which to render his decision. That evidence supported his residual capacity finding, and based upon that finding with vocational expert testimony, the ALJ reasonably determined that Mr. Wilcox could perform a significant number of jobs in the national economy. If the court has no further questions.
Apparently not, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. I respectfully request that the court affirm the ALJ's decision.
All right. Anything further, Mr. Plummer?
Yes, Judge. The hypothetical submitted by the ALJ says operation that he can push-pull the hand controls slightly, but still uses no constant use of hands, but still use hands frequently. What the ALJ here had to do was to limit this to light work, because if he goes to sedentary work, the grids say that he's disabled. So I think that it's just like the boilerplate that they say, well, the intensity, and then they go on to decide that, well, the intensity and is not his credibility is not any good. Well, here it's just like that boilerplate saying, well, we have enough evidence, therefore he's not disabled, rather than zeroing in on the facts that his IQ and the MRI
There was an MRI done in 2000 and not an MRI done recently to show the degenerative disc disease and how it happened and how it was affecting his nerves. And I just think that they're getting the cart before the horse in this particular case. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take